Segment 1.
Outside, the night was cold and wet, but in the small parlor of Laburnum Villa, the blinds were drawn and the fire burned brightly where father and son were playing chess. The father, who possessed unique ideas about the game involving radical changes, put his king into sharp and unnecessary perils that had even provoked comment from the white-haired old lady knitting placidly by the fire. "Listen to that wind," said Mr. White, who, having seen a fatal mistake after it was too late, was amiably desirous of preventing his son from seeing it. "I'm listening," said the son, grimly surveying the board as he stretched out his hand. "Check." "I should hardly think that he'd come tonight," said his father, with his hand poised over the board. "Mate," replied his son. "That's the worst of living so far out," bawled Mr. White, with sudden and unlooked-for violence. "Of all the beastly, slushy, out-of-the-way places to live, this is the worst. The pathway is a bog, and the road is a torrent. I don't know what people are thinking. I suppose because only two houses on the road are occupied, they think it doesn't matter." "Never mind, dear," said his wife soothingly. "Perhaps you'll win the next one." Mr. White looked up sharply, just in time to intercept a knowing glance between mother and son. The words died away on his lips, and he hid a guilty grin in his thin gray beard. "There he is," said Herbert White, as the gate banged and loud and heavy footsteps came toward the door. The old man rose with hospitable haste, and opening the door, greeted the new arrival. The new arrival returned the greeting. Mrs. White interrupted with a soft tut-tut, and gently coughed as her husband entered the room, followed by a tall, burly man, beady of eye and rubicund of visage. "Sergeant Major Morris," her husband said, introducing the guest. The sergeant major shook hands, and taking the seat by the fire, watched contentedly, while his host got out whiskey and tumblers and placed a small copper kettle on the fire. At the third glass, his eyes got brighter, and he began to talk, the little family circle regarding with eager interest this visitor from distant parts. As he squared his broad shoulders in the chair and spoke of strange scenes and doughty deeds, of wars and plagues and strange peoples. 21 years of it," said Mr. White, nodding at his wife and son. "When he went away, he was a slip of a youth in the warehouse. Now look at him." "He don't look to have taken much harm," said Mrs. White politely. "I'd like to go to India myself," said the old man, "just to look round a bit, you know." "Better where you are," said the sergeant major, shaking his head. He put down the empty glass and, sighing softly, shook it again. "I should like to see those old temples and fakirs and jugglers," said the old man. "What was it that you started telling me the other day about a monkey's paw or something, Morris?" "Nothing," said the soldier hastily. "Anyway, nothing worth hearing." "Monkey's paw," said Mrs. White curiously. "Well, it's just a bit of what you might call magic, perhaps," said the sergeant major offhandedly. His three listeners leaned forward eagerly. The visitor absent-mindedly put his empty glass to his lips and then set it down again. His host filled it for him. "To look at it," said the sergeant major, fumbling in his pocket, "it's just an ordinary little monkey's paw, dried to a mummy." He took something out of his pocket and began to show it to his guest. Mrs. White drew back with a grimace, but her son, taking it, examined it curiously. "And what is special about it?" inquired Mr. White, as he took it from his son, and having examined it, placed it upon the table. "It had a spell put on it by an old fakir," said the sergeant major, "a very holy man. He wanted to show that fate ruled people's lives, and that those who interfered with it did so to their sorrow. He put a spell on it so that three separate men could each have three wishes from it. His manner was so impressive that his hearers were conscious that their light laughter jarred somewhat." "Well, why don't you have three, sir?" said Herbert White cleverly.